You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for Friday, December 8th. The Jazz run into a red-hot Rockets team and do nothing to dispel that the Rockets are every bit as good as they seem to be. The rotation feels wonky. The addition of players is doing exactly what we thought. What's the answer? We'll look at that, and it's a packed Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks very much for tuning into the program. We've launched new Twitter handles and Twitter accounts on the network that are probably pretty good follows, Locked On NFL Net and Locked On NBA Net. So it's all of the Locked On Podcast Network hosts and in one place for you. It's a great collection of very, very bright people covering both the NBA and the NFL. I'm a bit sleepy today. My poor daughter got the flu that I didn't get. Turns out I may not have had food poisoning. I may have had the flu because the poor daughter had the same thing I did and was throwing up much of the night, so I was with her on and off. So you got a sleepy me this morning. That's all right. We'll fight through it. My sleepiness self has probably still got enough energy for everybody, I would hope. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai as well as Stevens Henniger College. Thanks very much to the two of them for sponsorship. All right, let's dig in right away. If I didn't say it already, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Jazz, and this is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, behind the scenes, a lot of look into what's going on with this club. All right, so we do this every night after games. We like to kind of just run through the numbers, and I think today is a good day for it, because last night, it really felt like the Jazz got completely waxed, and they did. The Rockets just rolled them. The final score of 112 to 101 is misleading. The game wasn't actually that close. But what's interesting is if you kind of dig into the numbers, and again, some of the numbers are a bit skewed in the sense that the last part of the game, the Jazz kind of came back to make it, you know, it was cosmetic. But the Rockets have now won 8 in a row. Coming in, they'd won the previous 7 by an average of 20 points. They've won 14 of their last 15. They'd won those by an average of 17 points. They've led by 10 or more in 38% of their minutes played. They were awfully close to that last night. Looking at the popcornmachine.net game flow last night, the Rockets took their 10-point lead a minute and a half, first 10-point lead of the game, kind of a minute and a half into the third quarter, and held it there for the rest of the game. So their first 10-point lead and happened at, I believe, the 10-minute mark. And so they were right around there. They spent 22 of the 48 minutes up by 10 or more, which is 46% of the time, which is a little more than what they have been doing. They've led by 20 this year in 26% of their second half minutes. You know what? That's about where they were last night, maybe a little less. And they've led by 10 or more in 53% of their second half minutes. Okay? They did to the Jazz what they've been doing to people all year. And it's pretty awesome. And it's pretty awe-inspiring. And it feels Warriors-esque, and then you add in the smart aspect of it, the fact they're taking 86% of their shots from the paint or the restricted area or the three, and it's pretty daunting. The Rockets at halftime of last night's game had 51 points. It was the second fewest amount of points they'd had in halftime of any game all year. So to some extent, the first half when the Jazz stayed in the game, we had a team that was struggling a bit. And then the flurry came to open up the third quarter and bust the game wide open. And that's when this thing ended early third. Ryan Anderson hit some shots. James Harden went on a mini run to close the second and kept it going. Last night in the first half, the Rockets' offensive rating was their 18th best offensive rating out of 25 games all year. They're the number one offensive team. The Jazz did, in the first half last night, what you really would want them to do. And then the Rockets, kind of, this is where they felt Warrior-esque, just had such a flurry all night long that the Jazz were unable to stay with it. You don't lose, by the way, when you make 18 threes, and they've made 18 threes in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of their last 8 games. And Andy Larson did the work on this. We've had it all week. I think I referenced it earlier. You know, you win about 80% of your games when you make 18 threes. Their offensive rating last night was their 14th best of the season, and their defensive rating was their 15th best of the season. Okay, so of their 25 games they've now played, or whatever they are, that was as, you know, that's middle of the road, which is kind of who we are, right? We're a little bit better than average. But I believe they've played 23 games, so that was their 14th offensive ranking and their 15th defensive ranking. In other words, we played them about as well as anyone has, other than, you know, they lost to Toronto this year, kind of a weird, in a weird game, and they lost in Memphis twice early in the year when Memphis was playing well, kind of had their number, and they lost in Philadelphia, or they lost at home to Philadelphia. But this game, the Jazz performance, when you look at the numbers last night, just is not that bad considering who the Rockets are. The Rockets' offensive rating last night was a 111.4. The Jazz' offensive rating last night was a 103.2. The Rockets have been so good recently, pretty much since Chris Paul's come back. That's the best offensive game anyone's had against the Rockets since the night when they stopped playing defense against Phoenix after scoring 90 first-half points. Again, some of it's garbage time, but so have been a lot of these games. The Jazz defensive rebounding numbers, which I thought were going to be terrible, turned out to be all right by the end of the night. The Rockets scored 4 mid-range points, and the Jazz did too. There were 8 mid-range points scored in the entire game last night. The shot chart stuff's going to be kind of fun here in a minute when we look at the shot chart stuff. From an analytical standpoint, you know, they had a 58% effective field goal percentage because they went 18 of 42 from 3. Let's go to the next level. But I think this is worth, I mean, the feeling I get, and you know, sometimes, I don't actually feel this was internet. I mean, people, we got hammered last night, lost 2 in a row, and everything that you'd worried about when Rudy coming back, making things wonky, happened last night. Right, the lineups are messed up. Favors and Gobert were on the floor. They got outscored 27-10 in that limited time. It just falls into all of the things we've been discussing and kind of wondering about last night. So there's no, you know, there's no question. But then you look at the performance compared to what Houston's been doing to people, and it's not nearly as bad a performance as you might have thought. Let's look at our player tracking numbers. The Rockets had 50 uncontested shots last night. They made 24. It's a lot. The Jazz had 46 uncontested shots. That's a lot. They made 20. Not a bad shooting night on either side, really. Joe Ingles was 3 of 9, which is probably unusual. Rubio, 3 of 7. Abba was 5 of 7. Alec with 3 of 6, which is great. Royce missed his 2. The Rockets' end of things, Chris Paul, 6 of 12. James Harden wasn't brilliant, 3 of 11. And Ryan Anderson was unbelievable, 6 of 7 on uncontested shots. He was in a rhythm. And let's look at our hustle notes for the night. The Jazz last night had 8 deflections, 2 from Ingles, 2 from Rubio, 2 from Alec, 1 from Tabo, 1 from Donovan. 4 screen assists, only 2 for Gobert. That number's just way down. 12 contests from Gobert, 11 contests from Favors, 10 contests from Donovan. Rockets had 10 screen assists last night. Harden and Capella each had them. And our final thing to look at is our actual shot charts. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. Here we go. The Rockets were way out of their sorts. The Rockets took 12 shots last night. 7 mid-range shots last night, I think. Let me go look at my game notes. Or my prep notes. So the Rockets take 86% of their shots either in the restricted area or threes. Coming into the game, they had only taken 117 mid-range shots all year. The next fewest is Toronto at 280. 117 and the next fewest is 280. So they were taking about 5 a game. And last night, they took 7 mid-range shots and 5 paint non-restricted shots. So they didn't hit their 81%, I don't think. They had 42 three attempts, 27 shots at the rim, and so 81 total shots. So 12 divided by 81, they were way off their regular. They were at 85%. They did hit it somehow. Unbelievable. Just remarkable commitment to playing a game. And I think they're right. I really do. I think they're right. The Jazz last night continued to get kind of the shots you want. They got 11 corner, three attempts. The Jazz were 1 of 19 in the paint non-restricted area. It's such a bad shot, and it's so funny. You get in there and you use that floater everyone teaches. I'm guessing the Rockets don't teach that. They just tell you not to take it. Jazz were 3 of 19 in the paint non-restricted and the mid-range last night. It's funny, the Rockets defend that very well. Jazz were 7 of 19 on above-the-break threes, which is right about league average. They were 4 of 11 on corner threes, which is right about league average. They were 71% in the paint, which is above league average, in restricted area. They just missed those little mid-range shots. They're bad shots. But really, my takeaway last night is that the Rockets are really, really good. I think they'll be the number one seed. Their offense is every bit as good as the Warriors. They feel like playing the Warriors. Matt Bullard on our postcast last night made a comment that was very Warriors, is they just kind of hit you with this wave at some point. That's exactly what they did. And it does feel a little Warrior-esque. We'll see I'm not sure how Ryan Anderson plays. I'm not sure who Harden guards in a playoff series against the Rockets, but I do think if there's a Game 7, it's going to be in Houston. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. Blake and the crew down there. If you're new to the program, you may not have heard the story if you have. So earlier this year, I got asked by Adam Chase, Chase Marketing, can I introduce you to the Murdochs, have you get to know them? Would you be interested in doing some work with them? So I said, certainly, I don't know them. And so we all got together and sat down. I got the history of the family and their 90 years of Utah and passed from generation to generation or multiple generations. Table is a really cool scene to see all of them and get to know them. And then they said, you know, we'd like you to sponsor Hyundai. I didn't know anything about Hyundai. I kind of knew them as the cheap car, frankly. And I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. Let me learn a bit. So they're explaining to me and they're telling me about how much they sell and what's going on. And so I'm listening and it's pretty interesting. And so they get me in a Hyundai Santa Fe and I'll admit I was a bit skeptical and I drive this thing for a very short period of time and pick up the phone. I'm like, I'm in, I can do it. The Hyundai Santa Fe is just a great, great, great vehicle. They were telling me a story at the time about Robbie Bosco was down and, you know, looking at the Lexus, and he swung by the Hyundai dealership, ended up buying a Hyundai. At the time, I was like, that seems far-fetched. It's not. It's not far-fetched at all. It makes complete sense, in fact, because you get all the same bells and whistles, all of the same features for, you know, $20,000 less. Then you're dealing with the Murdochs, who are just good people, and that's been really fun to get to know them. Tyson up in Chevy and Blake played some golf with Blake and really gotten to know them and who they are and what they're about. Check it out. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. I was driving the Ioniq I told you I'm on a mission to sell their Ioniq hybrid. If you're looking for a hybrid and you're going to do the hybrid thing, don't just immediately go get a Prius. Go check out the Ioniq. They're fabulous. In fact, a Locked On Jazz listener just got one this week and emailed me about it. There's only 7 left in stock, so make sure you go grab those. Also, that Santa Fe Sport is a fabulous, fabulous car. That's it. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. All right, I don't know that I have a good answer to what's to be done here for the Jazz. So the lineup of Gobert and Favors has always been successful until this year. So the easy answer is that Ricky Rubio's lack of offensive prowess has somehow created a problem there. And that in fact, may be true. Last night, for example, Quinn Snyder is, in order to give Derek Favors, who's, you know, our second or third best player, Rudy Gobert, who's our first, second, or third best player, you can't give them the appropriate respect. He is starting both of them. We saw when Gobert was out, the Quinn system would far rather play 4 wide, move the ball, spin it, Spursian, and roll. The problem is that last night, in the 6 minutes they were on the floor, they got outscored 27-10. So now all of a sudden, you're finding this point where in order to just kind of keep everyone happy, or not even, that's not the right way to phrase it, to be respectful to everyone, you're playing a style that is, or you're playing a lineup that is, you know, may have cost you the game. A little misleading, but didn't help. The night before in Oklahoma City, he only played them a minute and 48 seconds in the second half together. So you can tell that's not how he wants to play. In the Oklahoma City game, in the first stint, they were plus 6, I believe. Jazz won an 8-0 run to start that game, and then they were plus 5 the day before. Okay? You know, again, let's not only react to recency bias. And in the Washington game, when Gobert comes back, they were plus 2 in their first stint, minus 3 in their second stint. Excuse me, my voice is getting tired. So it's not, it was terrible last night, and that'll skew the numbers for a long time. All right, last night, 17, being minus 17 over 6 minutes means the Gobert Favors combination is not going to look good on paper again for a long, long time. But it's a fair comment that there is probably not another big, in a game that is spreading out and skilling out, there's not another big man combination in the NBA that is of similar skill set of these two guys, right? You know, Gobert, limited range, Favors, frankly, limited range. Both have worked hard at their passing. Neither can put it on the floor. Range of where they're playing. If you kind of look at those items, I don't think you can find another big man combination that's starting in the NBA right now. So it feels different than what the rest of the league is doing. When it's exposed, it feels really bad because, like Ryan Anderson, but Ryan Anderson does that to a lot of people. And it feels like something needs to be altered. Now, I don't know. I'm with you. I think we're overplaying it a little bit in the sense that Houston's great, right? I just think Houston's a really bad. It's like getting beat by the Warriors. We used to get beat by the Warriors for the last 2 years, and you just throw that out. Like, okay, that was against the Warriors. I do think the Rockets are there, and that the Rockets are at that same level where what they're doing to people, you just kind of say, yeah, you know. But let's walk through some of the options. I really think it would be very difficult to bench one of the two guys, Favors or Gobert. I think it would be very difficult if you're to bench Ricky Rubio. I think the Jazz are stuck a little bit for the time being, and Quinn's doing it correctly. Now, I think it's unlikely that there isn't some sort of alteration in how things are done, largely because of the fact that it feels wonky and feels like it doesn't work as much as of whether it does or not. But I think that's the numbers on the Rubio favors combination. The offensive rating's a 90, and it feels it again, right? So if you go look up the three-man lineup when the three of them are on the floor, the offensive rating number is a 90, and that's a number that's hard to kind of ignore. Again, last night skews some of it, particularly since coming back, but some of this also was going on beforehand. And you can feel it. You can see it. The ball's just not pinging and moving around the same way. Rudy needs to play better, which he really looks to me very much like the guy coming off the knee injury 2 years ago right now, where you could see all of it, but it just wasn't coming to fruition. And I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt to let him just kind of play it out. And that's a huge part of it. A lot of this goes away if Rudy's just playing better. A lot of this goes away if you're not playing the Houston Rockets. And I'm a little cautious that we're overreacting. I also think that a little bit of jumping on Rubio might not be entirely fair. But that's the starting lineup we have out there is not working. Like that's a fair statement. So Rubio, Ingles, Rodney Hood, Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors, which is what it started with for 9 games, had an offensive rating of 94.7. The 12 games that the other lineup has played together with Donovan in instead of Rodney has an offensive rating of 84.5. That's pretty dramatic. And is being outscored 28 points per 100 possessions. Like, okay, that's like, if you wanted to look at those numbers and tell me that lineup's not working, it's 78 minutes, it's a limited sample. Okay, but I'm going to play along. Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, and Ricky Rubio's offensive rating when on the floor together is a 91, and the defensive rating's a 106. They're a minus 15. It's by far the worst three-man unit on the team. Okay. Now, you can pick and choose these as you want, right? Joe Ingles, we never touch ever. But I think the Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio number together is not great. It's not. It's a minus 7 of our top 10 used two-man lineups. It's the worst we've got. I got it. Maybe it's because of who else is on the floor. But that also could be true in a lot of these other numbers, too. So let's make sure we're not, cherry-picking for the point of a mission that we want to have proven. Now, what is true is that when Jerebko and Cephalosha are on the floor, the team statistically is much better. And I don't know how Quinn really does it. I don't know. The strength of his team is egalitarian depth, egalitarian offense, and ball movement. And, how do you get back to it? And I thought it regressed. I thought there was a play last night that drives me crazy where AB caught the ball, dribbled once just out of instinct, then pass to Tabo. Tabo was wide open. If he hadn't dribbled, it's a shot. But by dribbling, it's not a shot anymore. Rudy does not move the ball as well. He holds it and waits for someone to come for a dribble handoff or a pick. Derek catches because he's able to play 12 feet out and face the basket more than Rudy. So sometimes outside the three-point line, he's swinging it. They're just different players. We sat here on this show and did say that this integration was going to be really messy. And in fact, it is. And Joe Johnson's integration is going to be messy because he's got to play. And as much as you might want to just play him the final 8 minutes of the fourth quarter every night and use him like he's a baseball closer, I think that's out of the box. That's pretty non-traditional. And I'm not sure it works. So I don't really have a good answer for you here. Let's kind of isolate it specifically. If you change the starting lineup in the Favors Gobert area, you have to probably do Derek. That's not deserved.
pretty good way to lose him. Probably better off hanging onto him until you're going to make some sort of move or figure out a way for it to work. In regards to Rubio, you better decide you're just completely done then. Right? The point of getting Ricky was believing you could develop his skill set, turn him into a better player, that it was going to be a little bit of a lengthy process. You're asking a guy who's now played for his fifth different coach in 5 years to adjust to a different system that's not as nearly ball dominant. And he's shooting almost exactly his career numbers right now. He's actually better. His effective field goal percentage is right on last year, and it's a notch off his career high. His steal numbers are his career. His assist numbers are down, but that's because of the system. Everything else is right on his career numbers, except for his effective field goal percentage, which is high. It's until the last two games, it was a career high. I'm not sure if you believe he's a piece to your puzzle and he's 27 years old and you're trying to develop him in your system, you think he can make him better, that benching him on the 25th game of the year is going to be at all productive. And let me ask you who you're starting, because really, Donovan Mitchell can play some minutes at this point, and they're doing it more and more, but it's not a particularly comfortable place for him. It's a pretty good way to have him, I think, fatigue out and get overwhelmed. He already has got the number one wing defender just coming to him every single night now. And then the other one that you point out there, Donovan's not a point guard, right? We tried this with Alec. I think we better be careful. We don't, you know, this is a pretty good way, I think, to overdip the Oreo cookie. So you better figure out what you're doing. And Rodney's not a ball handler. So if you're doing it when Rodney comes back and he's healthy, and now you're playing Rodney and Donovan together, that's hard because of the fact that Rodney's not a ball handler. Don't underestimate how much we're missing Rodney in that second unit. I mean, the difference between a second unit with Rodney Hood, who can score, who's scoring 20 points a game, and Royce O'Neal, who I like, but it's a very different concept, right? We don't have anybody in that second unit that's got any gravity at all. And AB is getting so much put on his plate, he's kind of popping back and forth right now between, you know, old AB and mature AB. There's no easy answers here. We knew this coming, so I think we're going to have to just deal with it. Today's show is brought to you by Stevens Henniger College. You're heading to work today, or you're at work. You took a break from work, whatever it is, and you hate it. It sucks, and it's brainless, and you don't want to do it anymore. Okay, now let's try to find a solution. All right, I got the gripe. Now let's work positively. What can you do? How can you get better? How can you change things? Maybe Stevens Henniger College is the answer. Help students get a better job sooner. Pretty simple. They work extremely hard to keep you in school. They give you the services you need from the very start. When you sit down with a financial aid planner from the beginning and they set up what the cost will be with no extra costs. Then throughout the process, they're helping you with fast-paced 4-week classes that are built for success, support there to help you. And then at the end, they're doing the same thing, because once you've graduated, you're a member of the family forever. Let's say that there's a course that's out there that's in your business field and you'd be better for taking it. You're welcome to audit it, take it for free. I don't know if audit's the right word, but take it for free after you've left, even if you've already graduated. That's what it's all about being part of the Stevens Henniger College. They're trying to open up opportunities. They've got a career placement staff. They've won several Best of State awards because they are there to help you out. A dedicated faculty and staff that are there for you. Maybe Stevens Henniger is the answer to help you take the next step in 2018. Hit keyword 88588. Text keyword to 88588. That's 88588 to find out more, or go to youineducation.com. Pack Friday. We've done it again. Another long show. I always try to get these down. I need them, frankly, to be down to 22 minutes or so, because I have too much stuff in my life and I can't do it. All right, let's look. I love this. I have not looked at these yet. I will look at them with you. I will touch a button right now and we will look at him together for the first time. LeBron James is not only on top of the Pack ratings, he is a whole point per game better. Pack is points above average created. The concept is that if LeBron James is using 22.8 scoring opportunities a game, just hypothetically, or he's actually using 21, if he how many points is he scoring more than the average player on a given night? LeBron is at 4.8 right now. 2 years ago, Steph Curry's unbelievable year was at 5.8. 4.8 is about as high as I've seen other than Steph's year. Really, Durant in 14-15 was the best at 4. Durant was the best in 13-14 at 4.8, 4.7. Durant in 12-13 was at 4.8. LeBron was at 4.4. So this 17-18 season right now with LeBron at 4.8, which I don't know if he can maintain, is truly remarkable. The top 10 pack players in the NBA, so most efficient offensive players. LeBron at 4.8, Harden at 3.8. Boy, that's just a big jump. Steph, 3.6. Anthony Davis, 3.6. This is how it usually works. There's usually two or three guys in the threes. We're at 4 right now, with Anthony Davis being there. Then Kevin Durant's at 2.8. He may work his way in. Giannis Antetokounmpo is at 2.7. Klay Thompson at 2.4. That's why Golden State can't lose. For all the talk of Houston, they right there is why Golden State can't lose. You got three guys with a pack rating of 3.6, 2.8, and 2.4. They combine together for about a 9, and nobody else in the league is above 2. And you can't have there aren't five guys on a roster that equal that 9. Unless they have a bunch of negative players, you're just not going to catch them. Enes Kanter's at 2.2, Clint Capella at 2.1. Houston's got two of the up in there. DeAndre Jordan is at 2.1 and on the trade block. Steven Adams at 2.0, and here's just incredible. Jason Tatum is at 2.0. I don't recall seeing a rookie this high for a season. Jason Tatum should probably be Rookie of the Year instead of Ben Simmons. Kyle Lowry's warmed back up to 2.0, and Al Horford's at 2.0. Those are the best. Kevin Love, Karl Anthony Towns, Ryan Anderson, another Houston guy, Bogdanović, Kyle Korver, Aaron Gordon, Rudy Gobert is the top Jazz offensive player. So that's the top 20 in 21. Gobert ties Dwayne Dedman and Aaron Gordon for the top 21. Let's go look at the bottom, the Lonzo Ball portion of things. Sam Amick and I talked about it a lot on Locked On NBA. Lonzo's at minus 3.9. That feels better, actually, as though he's getting better. Dennis Smith, is at minus 2.8. Russell Westbrook is at minus 2.6. Marcus Smart, minus 2.5. De'Aaron Fox at minus 2.2. So there's the rookies. Ball, Smith, Fox. That's the reality. Josh Jackson, rookie. Phoenix is next. Michael Carter-Williams continues to be a terrible offense player. Yusuf Nurkic is a minus 2. It's why Portland is a bad offensive team this year. Paul Zipser, Chicago, minus 2. Mike James in Phoenix, everybody likes so much, but the reality is that, minus 1.9. Deion Waiters, minus 1.9. Frank Ntilikina, minus 1.8. This is what shows you how incredible Jason Tatum is. And Carmelo Anthony, minus 1.7. Of non-rookies, Russell and Carmelo are unique there. Let's look at your Utah Jazz for the season pack. Gobert is at 1.8. Ingles is at 1.0. That's really good. Good for Joe. Tabo's at 0.9. Derek is at 0.9. Derek was great there for a while. To lose his number right now hurts. Jarebko at 0.7. Howell at 0.1. Burks at 0.1. That's the first time Alex has been positive in years. Rodney Hood's at 0. Epe Udo's at 0. Royce O'Neal's minus 0.6. Donovan Mitchell's a minus 0.8. Rubio's a minus 0.9. And Joe Johnson was a minus 1.4. You know, I'm a big believer you get rid of your negative players, you become really good. So if Rodney Hood's in for Royce O'Neal, that's a big bounce for us. And Rubio obviously would then be our one negative player playing, because I don't think Donovan's been negative over the recent period of time. And then you become good offensively. And that's what the Jazz have really, they're kind of following the exact model of what I believe other than Rubio. Before we go to the last 10 games, let me tell you about a company that kind of uses the same analytical approach. That's the Advocates. the Advocates have done something really interesting. Their philosophy in regards to helping you out from as an injury attorney is that every accident is different, but the process is the same. And so what they have done is they have built over the Advocates a 106-step process that they have perfected over 25 years to make sure that you have the most efficient experience. Efficient means productivity. Productivity means better communication, expediting the process, and what's most important to you if you're in an injury case, to get good results. Number two is probably to make sure nothing bad happens. Matt over at the Advocates has built this. He's got a list of attorneys that will reach you within 60 seconds if you're called to the Advocates. And then throughout the process, he'll have his special teams group working on the individual steps along the way, doing the things that they are great at. Give Utah Advocates a call at 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. If you're in an accident, you need to have an attorney that's going to know how to do the system and who's going to make sure nothing bad happens to you, gives you the best results. That's the Advocates, 801-355-5550. Over the last 10 games, number one in the league is LeBron. Number two is Kyrie Irving. Number three is Kyle Lowry. Number four is James Harden. Number five is Steph Curry. Number six is rookie John Collins in Atlanta. Number seven, Klay Thompson. Number eight, DeAndre Jordan. Number nine, Chris Middleton, worth noting as we head to Milwaukee next. 10th is Anthony Davis. 11th, Ryan Anderson. 12th, Trevor Ariza. Houston's got three of the top 11 recently. Kevin Love. And then Derek Favors at a positive 2.7 over the last 10 games. And now suddenly we're losing 2 points per. That's a huge, huge loss right now. Courtney Lee playing great, 2.5. Jason Tatum, 2.3. DJ Augustine in Orlando is a 2.0. Reggie Jackson, 2.0. And Bogdan Bogdanovic in Indiana is a 2.0. Coldest players in the NBA. So Donovan's not in there. I think a lot of you expected Donovan to be at the top. Still not that efficient. Russell Westbrook is the worst offensive player in the NBA over the last 10 games. Most negative impact, minus 3.7. Rookie Lauri Markkanen, minus 3.5. Rookie Dennis Smith, minus 3.5. Carmelo Anthony, minus 3.3. Rookie Lonzo Ball, minus 3.2. So he has improved. Shooting 33% and 24% from three, and that's an improvement. Just means he's probably not shooting. Eric Gordon of Houston struggling. He's a minus 3.0. Marc Gasol, minus 2.7. Nurkic, again, minus 2.6. Evan Turner, minus 2.6. Deion Waiters, minus 2.6. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, minus 2.5. Stanley Johnson, minus 2.5. And CJ McCollum struggling, a minus 2.4. Didn't know that. And Andrew Wiggins flies in here to minus 2.2. Utah Jazz players over the last 10 games. And then we'll take some questions and wrap the show up. Favors the best at 2.7. Donovan Mitchell is at a 1.6. That's very impressive. Last 10 games, 22 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. Going to the line 9% of the time, which is great because if he gets that up over 10, he becomes just a force. Taking 36% of his shots as threes. It's great. Tabo Sefolosha is a 1.4. Joe Ingles a 1.1. Alec is a 0.7. That is just such a great evolution. Still going to line a lot. Alex going to line 12% of his possessions. That's terrific. Jarebko's a 0.7. Hood was a 0.6, but he's only played 4 games. Udo a 0.3. Neto's even. Royce O'Neal's even. Rudy Gobert's a negative 0.4 in his 3 games back. Ricky Rubio's a minus 0.7. Rubio's more negative than he has been in years past. All right. Quickly, let me run to questions. Donovan's pack without the first 5 games. That's called skewing numbers, but we just heard what his top last 10 games was, so I think that's probably good. Aaron Gordon pack this year. Also, Aaron Gordon versus Jabari. Two guys that will be on the top of the Jazz list, and Jazz might be interested in maxing out to go add to the roster. Those are good points. All right, let's go look at Aaron Gordon. I think we mentioned him in the top players in the NBA, so worth watching. Aaron Gordon's a 1.8 this year. It's terrific. Last year, Aaron Gordon was a negative 0.5. What a great turnaround. The biggest change is last year, he took 25% of his shots as threes and made 29%. This year, he's taking 33% of his shots as threes and making 41%. Let's keep an eye on that. That's quite a jump. But if, in fact, he's learned how to shoot, then he is a very different player than he was a year ago. Jabari's one who's never quite helped his team, and now coming off two ACLs, you better be really certain. Jabari was a plus 0.4 last year. It's not bad. Jabari only takes 17% of his shots as threes. He's got to up that, and so that could help his productivity. So he was at a 0.4, which is not bad. Positive is good. Interesting question I got. Is Derek Favors more of a modern NBA center than Rudy Gobert? I don't quite know what the question means. I'd be curious what they mean by modern center. Because really, neither of them are modern centers. Modern centers are Jokic and Karl Anthony Towns, but now there's a kickback on those. Pack for the trade from Peter. You know, Jahlil Okafor is like one of the most negative players Pack's ever seen. So it's probably hard to be able to tell. And Nick Stauskas has not been great. Trevor Booker was not a great Pack player for us, and I remember I took a lot of heat for it because I would point that out. And he's a negative 0.4 Pack player for the Brooklyn. You know, you love all of his energy and all of his, you just don't see the things he doesn't do, which is, you know, can't shoot a three and doesn't go to the line, so he's not a particularly efficient player. There's some people who really still believe Stauskas can play. I don't know if that's true. Stauskas is even, and Okafor was a minus one this year. Somebody was asking about Thabo in the past. Has he been as good as he is right now? And I think he's expanding a little bit. He's got some career highs going on right now. But last year in Atlanta, he was a negative 0.4. In the 15-16 season in Atlanta, he was a positive 0.4. And this year for the Jazz, so he's been in kind of that range. Sorry, I just searched Atlanta instead of Utah for this year, which, you know, both he and Jarebko playing better than they have. This year he's a positive 0.9, so that's a big jump. And Jarebko playing very, very well. The Jazz seem to get the most out of these guys, and Quinn's system certainly does as well. That wraps up today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Thank you very much to Murdoch Hyundai, as well as Stevens Haniger College, as well as the Advocates. Thanks a bunch to them. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. 42 minutes in the books again.